This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Woohoo! It's finally winter. Hot, sticky weather is behind us. Winter sports and cozy days wrapped in layers of fuzzy warm clothing and snuggling with our pets. Ugh, what couldn't be better? And finally, an end to having to worry about all those pesky parasites that our veterinarians continue to nag us about. Fleas, ticks, internal and external parasites. What a pain in our budgets having to give these preventives. Besides, you haven't noticed any issues and are beginning to feel as though your vet is just trying to sell you medications you and your pet don't really need. My guest is Dr. Craig Pryor. He's a veterinarian and past president of the Companion Animal Parasite Council and currently serves on the board of directors. We'll discuss some of the myths of winter health risks for your pet from inside and outside of your home. We'll be right back after this short break.
Moose is the German Shepherd and hasn't had any kind of health problems at all. He has been on Dynavite since he's a puppy.
DINOVITE.com.
We tell anybody that has a dog, if there was something that you could do right from the beginning so that you don't have expensive veterinary bills, why would you not do it? Get the Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Get some Dynavite. How happy your dog will be.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Craig, thank you so much for being with us again. You were on about 2 years ago.
Yes, it's been a while. It's good to be back with you again.
Well, I have a feeling parasites really haven't gone anywhere.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, parasites are dynamic and ever-changing, and they're adaptable, and they're here to stay.
What's probably the number one health risk regarding parasites, the potential of it for our pets during the winter?
You know, a lot of that depends on what area of the country you're in, but let me just hit on a couple of things just to remind people. Ticks don't feed 365 days of the year. But ticks feed 12 months of the year. So there's always a life stage of a tick out there that's looking for a host. So, you know, if it's very cold outside and there's 2 feet of snow on the ground, if it's above freezing, ticks are active. They actually sit below the top layer of snow. And as soon as it goes above freezing, they come out and start looking for a host. So ticks are always there. They're always active. Just be aware of that. There are other parasites that are still around in winter. You know, fleas are still around. And people go, well, it's 30 degrees outside. Yes, but your house is what, 68 degrees, 70 degrees? You warmed your house up. You provided the perfect environment for fleas to survive. And so fleas will come inside on animals, on our clothing, and then they'll establish in your house and you've got them for the winter. Hey, you just got free renters, you know, and that's just wonderful. You know, heartworms are still at risk because mosquitoes love microclimates. So mosquitoes are still around and they're still able to spread heartworms. And then we've got intestinal parasites, which is really what we're here to talk about. But intestinal parasites are still a threat. And we actually do know that there is seasonality in certain parasites. So hookworms tend to be most prevalent in the summer months, but in the winter months, we tend to see whipworms has shown seasonality. December and January tend to be the peak months for whipworm cases, and January, February tend to be the peak months for roundworm cases. So roundworms are very prevalent in the winter months. And the thing is roundworms, the eggs survive literally for years in the environment.
Wow.
As do whipworm eggs.
What I'm always surprised is, you know, and it's a badness on my part, is I typically think of so many of these diseases as being puppy and kitten diseases or just being really very localized. I'm Southern California veterinarian, and it is rare for me to see whipworms or hookworms. I do periodically, yes, but I think roundworms is puppies and kittens, so I have a feeling I need to rethink that.
Right. So there was a dogpox study that was released this year, and they collected over 3,000 samples from about 200 dogpox in major metropolitan areas throughout the United States. And these samples were collected from mainly adult dogs. 1 in 5 dogs were positive for parasites.
Wow.
And over 80% of all dogpox were positive for parasites.
And most people are not going to be seeing worms. So we always tell people, you know, we have a wellness exam, bring in a stool sample. Ah, doc, but it looks just fine. You're just trying to get money out of me for doing this. And yes, you know, we do find evidence of these parasites in there. It's like, but it looked normal. I said, yep, that oftentimes is the case. You don't see the worms.
Correct. The microscopic, and they're there, you know, the worm eggs are there. So it can be devastating for these pets. And roundworms and hookworms are zoonotic. So it cannot, you know, so your viewers understand zoonosis or a zoonotic disease is something that can be spread from animals to humans. Classic case right now, COVID-19. It crossed over from an animal to humans. That's a zoonotic disease. Well, roundworms and hookworms are both zoonotic. You can catch parasites from your pets.
So another reason why mom always said, wash your hands. Now, you know, CDC and everyone else is saying wash your hands, not just for COVID, but for these parasites. How are our pets, Dr. Pryor, getting these roundworms, hookworms, et cetera? Because somebody is going to be listening right now going, well, okay, dog parks, boy, you know, such a huge number of parasites being picked up there, but my dog doesn't go to the dog park. I have that little fluffy dog that stays basically in the house with me, or I walk it around the neighborhood every once in a while.
Just so you know, there was another study done a few years ago where they looked at soil samples from common areas. They did it worldwide, but they look at soil samples from common areas. So they're looking at beaches, not dog parks, but beaches, greenways, bikeways, municipal parks, footpaths, places like that. The samples they got from the U.S. were from Connecticut, and what they found was 15% of all soil samples were positive for parasitic elements. So your dog doesn't have to go to a dog park to pick up parasites. They're just in the environment. So with roundworms, once the adult worms have reproduced, the female produces literally hundreds of thousands of eggs that come out in the stools and contaminate the soil. And so your dog may sniff on grass, lick a blade of grass, you know, get dirt on its feet and lick its paws or lick its fur somewhere and pick up the eggs. And then the eggs, the larva hatches out and penetrates the mucosa. And then those larva migrate through the body and they migrate into the muscle. They can insist in the muscle. So in other words, they go dormant for months or longer, and then they can reactivate. They'll eventually migrate through the liver, through the lungs, and they'll eventually end up back in the intestines where the life cycle starts again. But interestingly enough, in puppies can be born with it. There's a transplacental. So a female dog that's pregnant can pass roundworms to her babies while they're still in utero, and dogs and cats will also pass them through the mother's milk to puppies and kittens as well. So it typically is more a severe disease of puppies and kittens, but any age animal can contract them.
So you're talking about how it migrates. It can be insisted in muscles. It can migrate through the intestinal tract, going through the liver, etc., back into the intestinal tract. So if I were to see a older dog who's having liver issues, could I blame it on roundworms?
Potentially.
So what are some of the signs that we might see? So you say in a puppy, the way they can get it from mom. So I oftentimes think of the diarrhea cases, sometimes even pneumonia cases in puppies. What would be the signs to see in an older dog or cat?
So typically it's a lot of it's just unthriftiness. So pot belly, you know, weight loss, you know, unthrifty, you know, dull hair coat, coughing. You've already mentioned that. You know, in puppies, you can get vomiting and diarrhea as well. On top of that, in severe cases, in older animals, you can get that as well.
How is it typically diagnosed? Because I would say, okay, you send in a stool sample and I will check that stool sample and it comes back negative. So they look at me going, well, that was a waste of money.
It wasn't a waste of money, was it? It told you you're doing a good job, you know? And I always worry that, you know, when people say, well, you know, these stool samples are all negative. Yes, because you've got got your pet on a preventive. That's why you're doing it, you know? And so it tells you a lot. But if you come up positive, that tells you even more. It means you've got an issue that you've got to deworm this animal. You got to protect the pet. And, you know, by protecting the pet, you're protecting the family. It's a One Health message here. It's just not about the pet. It's about protecting your children and your family as well.
And I find what can be so frustrating, there are too many times I've had cases of diarrhea where a client brings in a stool sample, we'll check it, it comes back negative, and going, see, it's not parasites. And we've tried other things, bring me another stool sample. Doc, we just did that a week and a half ago. Why do you want to do it again? I said, well, worms need to be old enough to shed their eggs.
Correct.
They don't always shed their eggs, and a poop is just a poop in time. So Correct. Just because one sample is negative doesn't mean that next one can't be positive. And then when they bring it in and it comes back positive, sadly, I do the happy dance going, yes, you know, I was right. We looked again, we found something. Now there's something that we can treat. So oftentimes you do need to do multiple samples.
Some of these intestinal parasites complete their life cycle in just a few weeks. And so, you know, you can deworm an animal today, they can pick up a parasite tomorrow, and in 3 weeks, they'll be shedding eggs in the stool again, if you've got a contaminated environment. And so let's talk about contaminated environments. Less than 50% of people pick up their animal's stools. If you get nothing else out of this talk today, pick up your dog and cat's poop, please. You know, it's so important. And going to the dog park shouldn't just be a social hour for you. Supervise your pet. And when they poop, pick up the poop.
You sound like the Dr. Fauci of veterinary medicine. Wash your hands, wear your mask, pick up the poop.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right. I was shocked. There was a study I know in the CAPC Vet, so Companion Animal Parasite Council, has just done wonderful work of putting together various reports previously on heartworm disease. And I was shocked in Southern California that several of the cities right around me were some of these new emerging cases of heartworms. Like, whoa, where is this coming from? But now I know CAPC is doing studies on roundworms. And this was just done in October of this year. And there was 10 cities that were ranked the highest in the United States. So Charleston, West Virginia, Mobile, Alabama, Wichita, Kansas, Killeen, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Miami, Florida, Memphis, Tennessee, Alexandria, Virginia. Now we're going a little north. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. All these are basically back east. And then Visalia, California. What's the rhyme or reason? This just blows my mind.
We're not looking at absolute numbers.
Okay.
We're looking at changing prevalence, percentage prevalence. So it shows you there's something going on in your neighborhood, in your backyard. And so that's what we're trying to do is an awareness type thing. So if you see that you've gone from, I don't know, you know, you may have had 5 cases and you go to 20 cases, you've had a, you know, 400% increase in prevalence.
Okay.
Oftentimes it means that there's something going on, like there's been a bunch of rescue animals, Humane Association adoptions, relocation. There's a bunch of animals that have been brought in, and these animals are bringing in parasites with them. And that's what we've seen a lot with heartworms. So this heartworm has spread across the U.S. over the last couple of years because of the relocation after natural disasters like hurricanes. You know, we saw that with Hurricane Katrina, this massive movement of these displaced animals. And with COVID, we've seen a massive movement of not just relocation for natural disasters, but all these rescue and humane association animals that are being moved because there's a shortage. Everyone wants to adopt an animal right now. And there's been a shortage of animals. The shortage is typically in the Northeast and on the West Coast. So where are they getting the animals from? The Southeast. The Southeast is a hotbed for internal and external parasites. So these animals are being moved. They may have heartworms. They may have intestinal parasites. They end up in your neighborhoods. They go see the veterinarians and boom, we see this increasing prevalence in parasites.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, right. How they're moving around and spreading it with them. Right. I know, it's just before we started this podcast right now, I was talking to producer Mark Winter, and he just took a trip to North Carolina to visit his son and new grandson. And he took his dog with him. I thought, what fun. And this said the dog, just Nikki, had a great time on this trip. And they went to a park and just playing around. And I know Mark has, you know, the dog on preventives. But that's the way right now is people are traveling for the holidays, because we're doing this taping right before Christmas, that, yeah, they could be taking their dog someplace different, taking it to a different park, whatever, and picking up parasites.
So, I, you know, let's talk about Mark's dog. You just said he went to North Carolina. So I just brought up one of our websites, which is petdisealerts.org. And what we do now, the Companion Animal Parasite Council, we actually can do a 30-day forecast for parasites, certain parasites on the county level or the state level. So Mark went to North Carolina, and, you know, if I was his veterinarian, I would know what preventives he's on, but then I can go to Pet Disease Alerts and I can see that in the next 30 days in North Carolina, the forecast for heartworms is high, which is typical for this time of year. I can also see that there's a medium risk for Lyme disease there, and there's a high risk for ehrlichiosis, which is another tick-borne disease. So I can look at that and say, okay, Mark, now let's see what preventives I've got you on. You're going to this area. Your pet is at risk for ehrlichiosis in Lyme. We need to make sure we've got better tick protection for you. And we can adjust the preventives to be sure that we've got them protected while they're on vacation.
Now that we've just scared Mark. All right. We are going to take a short break, Dr. Pryor. Have a little commercial break. Bring it right back. And I definitely want to talk more about pet disease alerts. I think really important, because yes, it's like, oh my goodness, I never thought about, you know, people as they're traveling. Sometimes veterinarians may not say, where are you going? We don't always think about telling our vet we're going someplace. So we're going to be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
For those fortunate to have experienced the deep bond and unconditional love of a companion animal, the death that follows can be one of the most difficult and misunderstood losses to go through. Many times, this devastating loss goes unrecognized and trivialized by family and friends, leaving grieving pet parents struggling to find healthy ways to cope with the loss. In And I Love You Still, a thoughtful guide and remembrance journal for healing the loss of a pet, Dr. Julianne Corbin calls attention to the difficulties unique to the loss of a beloved pet and provides an interactive and compassionate guide to help you process your loss and work towards coming to a place of peace and healing. For those interested in journal therapy and looking for a professionally written and compassionate resource to help understand and reconcile the grief associated with the loss of your pet, this book is for you. And I Love You Still, a thoughtful guide and remembrance journal by Julianne Corbin, is now available for purchase on Amazon and other major book retailers.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Okay, Dr. Pryor, you were mentioning right before the break the pet disease alerts and how a veterinarian or even a pet owner can go and check online where they're going to be traveling to. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
What's the name of the site again?
So it's petdisealerts.org.
Right. And this is run by CAPC Vet, correct?
Yes. Your organization? We set up a separate nonprofit called Pet Disease Alerts. So it's run through that one on this website. Yes. But it's controlled by CAPC. Yes.
So you just put in where you're going to be going.
So it's, you don't put in where you're going. It's that ASHU map of the U.S. You can click on the state, and then you can click down to the county level. And we've got on there heartworm for dogs. But then we have tick-borne disease agents. We've got Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, and Lyme. So the big three of tick-borne diseases. And you can see what the forecast is for the next 30 days or wherever you're going to be going.
Does it also have canine influenza? Because before the break, you were talking about people moving pets around because right now everyone wants to adopt after we have major national emergencies, these earthquakes, fires, floods, hurricanes, disasters that people are moving animals around. So canine influenza is one that we need to be concerned with.
We have alerts. So you can receive alerts from us. So if on that same website, Pet Disease Alerts, you can sign up to receive alerts when there's outbreaks in your area. So we have alerts for canine flu and canine leptospirosis. So when you sign up with us, you'll set up an account. You'll then choose your state and you can pick three counties and we will email or text you if there's an outbreak in your area. And, you know, this is just a really wonderful service because it helps with awareness of what's going on. And, you know, especially for veterinarians that they can help, you know, warn the client base, you know, and because these are devastating diseases. Canine flu is horrible. Leptospirosis is deadly, you know, causes kidney failure in dogs, causes liver failure. It's transmissible to humans. It is another zoonotic disease, something else you can contract from your animal. Good news is they're both preventable through vaccination. And we just want to get the word out and, you know, talk to your veterinarian. They're the local experts. They're the ones that can best help you to protect your pet. And by protecting your pet, you're protecting your family.
Dr. Pryor, speaking about vaccines and leptospirosis in particular, I know probably 10, 15 years ago, there was a vaccine for leptospirosis and many animals seemed to have some nasty adverse reactions to it, side effects. So a lot of people said, oh no, veterinarians included said, oh no, I will never vaccinate for this disease again. And now the disease is showing itself. These alerts are fabulous. And now there's a vaccine. And I'm trying to, especially people who've had pets for a long time, dogs saying, you need to get a vaccine for leptospirosis. And it's like, oh no, doc, I remember another dog of mine had a problem. Please talk to us a little bit about how this vaccine is not the same. And it really is very safe.
It is a very safe vaccine. And so it's something that their drug companies are always improving what they've got. They're always looking to make things better. So they have cleaned up the vaccine a lot. So it was a lot of extraneous proteins in there that were causing reactions. With improved technology, they've been able to get all those out, which is really good. And so there was actually a study published in the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association, I think it was October 2018, where they did a study of the reactions of leptospirosis vaccines compared to all the other really good vaccines we use. And there's no significant difference in the reaction rate. And it's all very, very low. So the vaccines have been improved so much and they've broadened the scope with the leptospirosis vaccine. So now there's four different serovars. So there's different strains of leptospirosis in dogs and they've got four strains in there now. So it's extremely effective. And I've got to really just tell people they need to do it. Because it used to be leptospirosis. I don't know if you remember Dr. Bernardine, but you know, when we first started practicing, well, I've probably been out there longer than you have, but when we first started practicing, you know, this used to be a disease we'd see in farm animals or dogs that are, you know, running around the woods and swimming in ponds and things like this. It's now a disease of high-rise dogs, these little fluffy white dogs that are 10 pounds that are picking them up in inner cities.
And I was going to ask, isn't this a lifestyle vaccine where oftentimes, okay, your Lyme disease, if you're hunting and fishing and getting outdoors with your dog, but you just mentioned it. This is the white fluffy dog disease too.
To me, it's not a lifestyle vaccine. It should be considered a core vaccine. And with my pets, it is. My dogs are always vaccinated against Lyme, lepto, and flu.
We also were talking about the canine influenza, and oftentimes people hear that, they think, okay, is this kennel cough? And oh yeah, I get my dog vaccinated for Bordetella, that's kennel cough, so my dog is safe and it doesn't need the influenza vaccine. If you could maybe touch a little bit about the canine infectious respiratory disease complex, a mouthful for, oh yeah, that coughing dog.
Yes. So, you know, the misnomer is it's kennel cough. And kennel cough to me encompasses a lot of different disease entities. So you can say kennel cough could be caused by canine Bordetella, canine influenza, canine adenovirus, mycoplasmal infections, chlamydia, there's lots of different things, bacterial infections, there's lots of different things. So there's probably, if it came down to it, 10 or 12 different disease entities, which everyone lumps together under kennel cough. And so canine influenza can mimic a very mild upper respiratory infection, but it can also get very ugly very fast. And these dogs can get very severe pneumonias from it. It can be deadly to these dogs. And so, and when it runs through a population, it's very fast and it's very aggressive. And, you know, you don't want to wait for there to be an outbreak to try to then run to find a vet to get a vaccine, because vaccines take time. You've got to give an initial, like the COVID-19, you've got to give an initial immunization, and then you've got to wait 3 weeks and give it a booster. And then about 2 to 3 weeks after that, you should have immunity. So I just had, there's a 5 week time span before you get proper immunity. Well, if you've got an outbreak of canine influenza in your neighborhood and you vaccinate that day, it's 5 weeks before your dog's going to have sufficient immunity. Your dog's still at risk. So if your dog, to me, if your dog goes to the dog park, if it goes to boarding, it goes to grooming, it goes to daycare, it should get a flu vaccine.
And just even walking the neighborhood, it could theoretically run into some type of sputum from another dog that had been going to boarding, grooming, doggy daycare, whatever.
Or you got a dog in the front yard barking at your dog as you walk by 10 feet and it's aerosol.
Not wearing a mask.
Right? Exactly. And it's aerosol and spreads. So your dog's at risk.
Is this one of those zoonotic diseases? Because people hear influenza going, oh, crud, something I can get from my dog?
No, this one's not zoonotic. Thank goodness.
Good. And if I remember correctly, this is one, and you're talking about diseases being spread as people have the best of intentions and moving pets around the United States. Canine influenza, one of the last strains, came from Korea, I understand.
Yes, it did. Yeah. And, you know, I also mentioned that it's spread by fomites as well. So you can spread it on your clothing as well. So
wash your hands.
Yes. Yes. Wash your hands. Back to that.
Back to that. So speaking of back to that, COVID, we're hearing so much about it. And I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about COVID and the spread of that disease as a zoonotic from us to our pets. We hear a lot about there's lions and tigers and domestic cats and mink that are contracting it. How about just generally in the United States, our own domestic cats and dogs, can they get it?
So they say that they could potentially be at risk. So, you know, what the CDC is now saying is that if you have COVID, then you shouldn't be caring for your pet. So, you know, have someone else in the household, isolate from your pet, have someone else take care of your pet for you. And that will put them at less risk. And wash your hands, wear a mask, and you'll decrease the risk as well. So
remember what your mommy said, wash your hands, and wash your hands long enough and with soap and water.
Correct.
What is the best way that we can protect our pets in general from getting diseases? I know it's very broad.
Yes, very broad, but you should be seeing your veterinarian. And I like to see pets every 6 months. Your veterinarian is the local expert. They know your pet. They know you. They know your lifestyle. They can best advise you on how to protect your pet. As far as parasites go, the good news is we have very good broad spectrum preventives that you give monthly. There are a couple out there that you can get injections for. They're not as broad spectrum, but they're still very good. So your veterinarian will then work with you to work out what's going to work best with your lifestyle on how best to protect your pet. And these are very broad spectrum, going to prevent heartworms, intestinal parasites. You can prevent fleas. You can prevent ticks. But you also need to do surveillance as well. So the Companion Animal Parasite Council, when it comes to intestinal parasites, recommends that all puppies and kittens be tested at least 4 times in the first year of life, and all adult cats and dogs be tested at least twice a year thereafter. So that's important guidelines. And then we should be testing for heartworms at least once a year. And then we should be testing for tick-borne diseases as well, because parasites are dynamic and ever-changing, and parasites are on the move. And we do know that Lyme is spreading, ehrlichiosis is spreading, they're moving into areas. You're in Southern California, you've got ehrlichiosis coming up out of Mexico, and it's moving up into California. So, you know, that comes from ticks.
So many people right now getting their pets on Craigslist. I've, you know, seen all these puppies coming into the practice who are sick puppies and going, yeah, they have no guarantee, no health background. And so many of them are coming from over the border. Now, you mentioned getting your pet's parasite checked, so stool checks twice a year. And somebody's going to say, you know, I have an indoor cat. Why do I need to get my indoor cat checked? You know, it's not seeing anyone else.
Right. Well, we do know. I've seen one report out there that was written up that said that 15% of all potting soil contains worm eggs. Okay. So we will have houseplants and the cats like to get into those. And cats are hunters. They like to hunt bugs. So just Google cockroaches and roundworms and it'll curl your toes and make you realize that, you know, next time your cat hunts a cockroach and eats it, it may contract roundworms and mice as well. They can contract parasites from mice as well, intestinal parasites from mice. So they're big hunters. And, you know, these little bugs get into our house. We just don't realize it.
Because our cats are there and they eat them before we have a chance to.
Correct.
Okay. Here's a total aside. Do ants carry anything?
Oh, I don't know. Probably.
They have to carry something because
I am sure they do.
Oh, I swear my condominium is built on a huge anthill. Drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. All right. That aside, what is your takeaway message? It sounds like you've already done it. See your veterinarian. They're your experts.
Yes. Your local veterinarian is your local expert. And, you know, the bottom line is protect your pet, because when you protect your pet, you're protecting your family as well.
Keep your pet on that parasite control. Do it year round.
Year round.
Perfect to do. Even indoor cats with little white fluffy dogs in high rises can get these diseases. And capcvet.org. Awesome, awesome website. I use
Thank
it
you.
All the time.
And for your pet owners, petsandparasites.org is a very friendly website for them. And then we've got petdisealerts.org.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Pryor, thank you so much. Yes, you've curled my toes and realize, yes, so many things I need to be aware of, and really stress preventive care because it takes care of the entire family. Thank you.
My pleasure.
So this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to myself and Dr. Craig Pryor, past president of the Companion Animal Parasite Council and on their board of directors. Please, I hope you listen again next week. We'll give you more information how to curl your toes, keep your pets and the family healthy. So stay tuned, stay well, wash your hands, wear your mask, pick up the poop.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.